I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Man, we don't do this often, but a little match madness, as they call it.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Yeah. So, John Calipari.
A little match madness for your drive to work?
For my drive, yeah. A little match madness. And John Calipari, pick up a copy of your... You are the biggest loser in the NCAA tournament so far. How about your Oakland Grizzlies, baby? Your Oakland Grizzlies.
Hey, the Grizzlies are in the round of 32 now in the tournament, while the Michigan Wolverines are home.
And this Jack, is it, they pronounce it Golik, I think. Anyway, 32 points, 10 of 20 from downtown. Just lit them up. You can't lose to Oakland. You can't. If you're Kentucky, you're Kentucky. You can't be the blue blood. They were a third seed, I think.
Yep.
So you do see sometimes some 3 and 14s, but not many.
You've seen 16s lose twice.
I know that finally happened
twice. I mean, and yeah, 15s have lost multiple times or
many
won multiple times.
Yeah. So is your bracket busted? I know you did one.
No, mine's actually pretty good. I don't think I had Kentucky very far. I did have Oregon over South Carolina, so I got that one right.
That's a good one, yeah. You
know, so we can break down my whole bracket here, because that's compelling.
Yeah, that's the show we want to do. Okay, everybody get your brackets out. We'll tell you how ours are doing.
I just have a bracket with my son's one to do one for the first time.
That's the best.
We have a family pool going.
So. Absolutely, and make them pay up if they lose.
Yep, and my youngest is, you know, his first time ever filling out a bracket. The four playing games, he went 0-4.
He lost all. Yeah, exactly. How do you lose the play-in games? I mean, somebody's got to win one of those, right? He went 0-4 in the play-in.
Yes, he did.
Woo! That's a bad omen. Yeah. So do you guys do it like you get 1 point per round per team that
we're
wins?
We're just doing 1 point for every game, so it'll be 67 points for the tournament. So
straight up, okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, he's still in it. I mean, everybody's going to lose four games, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's
got to make it up.
Yeah, I think he was after four. He was three behind me. I got three of the four right, so some catching up to do. But
oh well, it's always, you know, you don't let them win. I mean, that's my thing. You know, you got to earn it.
Never.
And when they're old enough to beat you, you say fine. But I never going to give up anything that way. All right, so we got your mailbag. We got some mailbag questions. Some left over, some new. So we'll get to those in just a minute. All answered 100% correctly, or, and this is important, your money back. I want to start with a little story, a little thing I did that you can check out in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. It may be out by the time you hear this podcast, but shortly thereafter, I think, about a weekend or something. Anyway, a little while ago, you know, when Baker Mayfield did his contract extension, you know, the four, what was it, 3 years, $100 million, $50 million guaranteed, something like that. Good time to be Baker Mayfield, right? Good time to... your wife is expecting their first child, a little girl in April, and you finally have a place you can call home for maybe 3 years at least, maybe four, and, you know, a good football team. Mike Evans is back. We've talked about, we're going to talk today, by the way, to Lavonte David is going to have his news conference. So I think that's around noon. Lavonte David, 34 years old. I'll get to him in just a minute. Going to play his 13th season in Tampa Bay. Just incredible. But the story on Baker and Liam, I think, you know, last year was a very uneven year for the Bucs and to some degree for the offense. Now I think, you know, what they were able to do, they started 3-1 and then they hit that swoon and lost 6 out of 7. To be able to pull out of that death spiral is almost impossible. Like it's really, really hard to do, and I credit all the coaches for that. I credit Baker for that too, because here's a guy that, you know, hadn't won much over the last 2-3 years, obviously bounced around with four teams, but he didn't waver. You know, like he stuck with it. He was very positive in the locker room. He tried to get better himself, play better. He had some games where he was like under 50% completion. In fact, one of those they managed to win in Atlanta, a must win. that they had up there in Georgia. But, you know, I didn't think Canales ever really got a handle on the run game. You know, they installed kind of a new scheme, you know, a lot more outside zone runs, and they obviously had some new offensive linemen too. They started out with Matt Filer at left guard, and then, you know, eventually Aaron Stinney took over, and I think that helped them a little bit. Neither one of those guys are back for this year. But it wasn't good, right, especially in the beginning. And then they kind of hit their stride a little bit, and then Rashad White ran really well the last four or five games, and he came, 10 yards shy or so of 1,000 yards, which is a good mark. It's 17 games, so it's not crazy good, but it's good. So they got it. They got better as the year went on, but then they got better as an offense too. But the one thing about the run game that, you know, in talking to Liam Cohen and talking to Baker Mayfield that was lacking, I think, is that while Dave Canales, you know, in his first time calling plays since high school, when he coached high school 15, 16 years ago, he would basically, they were sort of like run it plays. And what I mean by that is, you know, you anticipate what the defense is going to be in, you know, you kind of know the down and distance, you've done the film study, and then you call the play. It's kind of a call it, run it kind of play, like this is what we're doing. And yes, you can always check to other plays. I mean, there is an audible system, and they do give quarterbacks, even Baker Mayfield, you know, some latitude with that. But in general, there wasn't a lot of, you know, there wasn't a lot of changes schematically based on what the defense was doing, from what I understand. And so some of those plays were doomed before they ran them, you know, from a numbers standpoint, whatever that the defense was doing. You know, that play against that defense wasn't going to work. Now, against another defense, it'd be great. So this year, I think if there's hope for the run game, it's going to be that Liam Cohen is going to put a lot more on Baker Mayfield's shoulders, and also on the offensive line. Like, they have to work together in concert, obviously. But in just talking to Liam and Baker, I think it's going to be, you know, a lot of situations where he gets to the line of scrimmage, and if they got a bad run play, or if they have a run play against a defense that's going to be bad, it's just not going to go, you're going to see him and the offensive line switch out of it quickly and either get to another play or get to another run play, but they are not going to just beat their head against the wall and run a bunch of bad plays. So I think the combination of that, because, you know, Cohen he called plays at Kentucky. He did not with the Rams. That was, you know, that was Sean McVay's purview. You know, he helped, you know, install game plans, and he knew what was going on and things. But, I mean, Sean called the game. But this will be the first time that Cohen has done it at the NFL level. And yet he's a very confident guy, and he's bringing a lot of concepts that the Rams had, which is, there's some carryover too, you know, because Shane Waldron was in Seattle, and that's who, you know, that's who Canales learned from, and he brought a lot of the same concepts here. And so there's definitely some carryover. Some language things are different, but it's not an offense that won't fit Baker Mayfield. In fact, he's run it before the 5 weeks he was up there in Los Angeles after he got put on waivers by Carolina. So there's carryover. But, you know, that, and just in talking to Mayfield, I said, it looks like you're going to have a lot more on your plate. You know, and the thing Baker doesn't get credit for is how smart he is. He's played a lot of ball, and he's played in a lot of systems, going all the way back, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, obviously Cleveland. He had like four coordinators, you know, then on to Carolina, and then the Rams for a crash course, and then Tampa Bay. So he just said that, you know, it's something he thinks Liam is going to do a good job of, like, presenting the whole package at once instead of me just making a random call at the line of scrimmage. He said, we'll go into this game plan saying, okay, guys, this is what we're looking for to run this play on. And if not, then this is the answer we're going to have. And so if you see a certain look, you're going to quickly go to another play, and the offensive line and the quarterback are going to get you there quickly. And he said that, you know, obviously it's going to be a little more film study when it comes to that, and that's okay. But we'll know what we're looking for, and you'll teach everybody else where they're expecting the audible. They'll come in the line of scrimmage. They'll see that play is not going to work against that particular front, and then the offensive line will be anticipating to hearing the call that, you know, they're changing it to something else. And so he says, you know, when you teach guys like that, those things, then they're going to grow because now they're learning football and understanding, you know, hey, this is a bad look here. We need to do something else. So they might understand that, you know, whether it's a pass route, receivers have to do adjustments all the time. Same thing with maybe a different blocking scheme you have to come up with. But there's going to be, I think, an element to Liam's offense that was missing in Dave Canales' offense. And I've talked to several people about this. Like, yeah, Dave had some really good ideas, but they didn't always work against the fronts that he was seeing, you know? And so now there'll be, I think, more of an opportunity to get out of those bad plays and get into some better runs, and particularly with the run game. The pass game, there's already checks and things. But where they need to improve, I mean, they were 3.5 yards a carry again. And that, you know, 2 years in a row, you can't be – the one thing, you know, rankings are sometimes deceptive, right? Because you know this, Steve. If you have a team on defense, say, that gives up a lot of pass yards, what does that mean? Well, sometimes it means that you're ahead and they have to throw to try to get back in the game, mm-hmm. right? And so that same team may be tops against the run, you know? And so you're like, whoa, you're really good against the run. Well, you're good against the run because teams have to abandon it. You may not be a great run defense, mm-hmm. but by the third quarter, they're like, we got to throw. We're down by 21, you know?
Yep.
So stats are deceiving, but what's not deceiving is yards per carry. You know, you have to average 4 yards plus in this league. You just have to.
No question about it. I mean, it's it took Canales a while not only to figure out some of the run game, but how to use Rashad White the right way.
Yes.
You know, that was part of it, too. He's not a Derrick Henry go right up the middle and pound it out. I mean, like, they had to find creative ways to get the ball in his hands.
Right, and do it in the passing game, which I thought he was a little mm-hmm. slow doing, but once he started throwing it to him again, that was even better.
But I also think once they got him in the passing game, it gave him more confidence in the running game.
Sure.
And I think it opened up a lot of things when they did that too.
Sure
it did. And good on Dave Canales for figuring that out as the season went along.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember our conversations halfway through the season going, he's not RB1. Like,
no.
They don't have an RB1. And then all of a sudden, they found the ways to get him involved that utilizes his strengths and the team's strengths with the offensive line and that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because let's not forget, it's, you know, outside Tristan Wirfs at left tackle, I wouldn't say that was
they're
all
not
pro
stellar
offensive
up
line.
Front.
Like,
no,
you know, mm-hmm. they still, you know, they were serviceable, but they weren't a dominating offensive line. So you had to get creative with how you did the running game, and including some of it in the passing game and out wide. But but yeah, this year, I think with Baker being a second year in the system, very similar system at least.
And he's run this system before.
And because Liam knows him, he's going to give him more responsibility, as you said.
Yes,
you know, I think you're going to see, you hope, a more efficient offense. Because they'll be in the right plays depending on the right coverage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll adjust to what the defense is showing them instead of just, here's the play we called, let's run it.
Yeah, there'll be less call it plays. And I think that'll help them be more efficient. And that's, you got to be efficient on first down. You know, if you're going to keep the ball and all of that. You mentioned, you know, Rashad. I mean, it took a long time really for him to become, you know, sort of a complete back in this offense. When they started throwing him the ball, like they always say, and I forget which coach I was talking to about this, but it's so true. The defense will not cover a route that you don't throw ever. Like, you know, 100% of the time they won't cover it if you don't throw it. So if Rashad White goes out in the flat and you never throw it to him, guess what they won't do? They'll never cover it. Like, you have to throw the ball there to get those guys to respect that. And otherwise, he's just a worthless decoy. And I believe he was one of the top, if not the top, ball carrier last year for making the first guy miss. You know, he did a really good job of not letting one guy bring him down in space. He's terrific because he's strong, he's fast, and he's got some moves, and he won't let that first guy bring him down. So, I mean, I don't know anything about Liam Cohen except what I've heard. I know Baker likes him a lot. He says he's having the most fun he's ever had in these last 3 months coaching football in Tampa. And a lot of that is because, much like Kentucky, like this is his show. Like he gets to call the plays. He didn't get to call the plays with the Rams. He had been there two stints. He's been to Kentucky a couple times. But to do it in the NFL, and in the NFL, it's a lot more collaborative, right? Like it's still your baby, but there's a lot of attending physicians around that delivery. And so, you know, everybody kind of has their input. And, you know, for Liam, there's still some guys on the offensive staff, like a Skip Pete, that knows his running backs, right? And people that he can lean on that, you know, even Tom Moore, you know, has seen it all. But there's guys that he can lean on and say, okay, you know, we tried this with this guy, or, you know, this is what this guy does well. And he can see that on film too. But it just helps when you have a bunch of ideas and a guy that's willing to, you know, to make it collaborative. And that's what he said when we talked to him a week or two ago, again, after he'd been in the building for a while, that he's just having so much fun because it's such a good group to coach with. And obviously he knows it's going to be fun with Baker Mayfield. And the word he used, I love this word to describe Baker, because I think it's one that fits him. He says he's an igniter. You know, Baker Mayfield is an igniter, and he's the type of guy that, you know, gets things going. You know, like he just has a way about gets people going, gets drives going, all that kind of stuff. And that's, you know, when he went to L.A., they were in a funk. Like that year that he went out there, Stafford had been hurt. The Rams weren't winning. It was, you know, the worst year, you know, kind of a Super Bowl hangover year, if you will, for Sean McVay. And even though they didn't win a lot of games, but he did win his first one. But when he got out there, he said, you know, instantly we became, football was fun again. Like Baker brought fun back to us. And I know Baker just rediscovered his love of the game because he had been through some stuff. But he's out there in practice and he's challenging Jalen Ramsey and he's, you know, doing unbelievable things in games and, you know, kind of just playing a little bit of street ball because he didn't have a lot of time to learn the offense and, you know, was just going to players, not so much plays. But through all that experience, you know, a guy like Liam Cohen understands what Baker's all about. And that's exciting to him because you've got a quarterback that's always going to be on it, you know. So, but anyway, check it out. That and other things about the Bucs and what's been going on in this offseason. I don't know how much of a free agent list that they have right now that they're still working on. Obviously, they want to still extend Antoine Winfield Jr. They'd like to get an extension for Tristan Wirfs. Those aren't things that have to be on the front burner right now, although, you know, probably by June or July, they'll have to try to get an extension for Winfield, or he's going to play under the fifth-year option. Which is also possible, but I know they'd like to lock him up long term. Another thing, and this is a terrible story that we mentioned the other day, this Cameron Sutton, the place for the Detroit Lions, he has not been located. March 7th, Hillsborough County Sheriff's responded to his home in Lutz, and they found a female victim who had been battered. And so now he's wanted for... there's a warrant out for him for aggravated battery, I think, by strangulation, domestic violence by strangulation. That said, they still haven't located him, as far as I know. He's been on the lam for a couple weeks. Well, on Thursday, not surprisingly, the Detroit Lions released him. And he has about a $10 million guarantee, I think, but they will have an opportunity to contest that because, you know, there are clauses in your contract that don't permit you to get in this kind of trouble. So we'll see. It's not so much about the money, but it's a terrible story, and you hope they find Cameron wherever he is. But, you know, that was inevitable that the Lions looked into that and decided, you know, forget. Sometimes you don't need due process, right? Like sometimes the evidence is obvious enough if you read the sheriff's report that, you know, you just can't continue going forward. So anyway, the Lions released him. What else we got going on?
Jonathan Aranda has got out 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh man, that, you know, I felt so bad when I saw that. It was so random. I guess he had some kind of a fractured thumb or finger or something like that.
Yeah, they had put a pin in, so he's out 4 to 6 weeks. He was one of their best hitters in spring training.
He was tearing it up. And I've always liked, though, whenever he's come up and played, and it's been kind of like, you know, hard to do because you're not playing every day, so you don't get that many at-bats. But I've always thought that he's done everything he can do to Triple-A. He's maxed out there. You know, he'd wear that out for the rest of his life, like Crash Davis. But he's a really good hitter, and he was so locked in for spring training that you like to have those guys – that are that locked in start on opening day, right, or play on opening day so that you can utilize their hotness. But, yeah, tough break. Going to miss 4 weeks there with the hand, so that's unfortunate for them. But, hey, we already had a couple major league games, right, over in South Korea.
That's correct.
We won't get into this. This Shohei Ohtani story is crazy. I don't have enough time to get into it. Well, we do have enough time, but we're not going to get into it tonight. Until there's more known. But his interpreter, as the story goes now, based on Ohtani's version, is had a lot of gambling debts and may have allegedly used $4 million of Ohtani's money to cover those. So all kinds of crazy stuff going on early in the season for just a bona fide superstar with the LA Dodgers. So that's been quite a story to try to follow. I can't really make sense of it. Anytime you have something like gambling involved, it you know, obviously your ears perk up. But so far, at least, they say that betting on baseball was not part of this interpreter's routine. It was mostly European soccer and, you know, some other sports here in the States, but not baseball. So we'll follow that. All right. We got some mailbag questions here before we call it a week. Let's get started.
All right. Let's ask Rick, who will lead the Rays in home runs this season and how many will they have?
Whoo. Good one. Well, the guy I think that's led them this spring is Yandy Diaz, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's probably had more than anybody, but,
can Brendan Lau stay healthy? Will Jose Siri continue his power surge?
If he did, I would say Lau's a good choice. I'm thinking
Randy's always a possibility, of course.
Rosarena's probably going to be around 25. I don't know that he's going to have one of those big 35, 40. Isak Paredes got some power. Because he hit over 30 last year, I'm just going to stick with Paredes. He has this, and it's all pull, which is rare, because he doesn't really hit the ball to center or right field, but man, when he turns on it, there are no doubters. I mean, he's some screamers out there. So I'm going to say he's going to lead him again.
I'll go with Jose Siri. And only because last year he hit 25 home runs in 100 games, 101 games. So
that's true.
For at-bats, he had like 200 less at-bats than Paredes with six less home
runs. Oh, yeah. If he stays healthy and plays a full season, he could hit 40.
So I think it'll be Jose Siri.
Yeah, and Randy
and Brendan Lau's got a chance if he stays healthy.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. He hit what 1 year his high was, 39 bombs or something like that? 33, 39?
He's been up there. Take a look.
He's hit over 30 a couple times, I think.
39 and 21, yep.
39
99 ribby.
That's some power. For not a guy that's very big, but just quick hands.
But he played 149 games that year.
That's why, yeah.
He just, in 2022, he played 65. Last year, he played 109.
Yeah, you got to get him back in that 135, 140 range.
Yeah, he's just got to stay healthy.
That would totally change their lineup. So, yeah, we're what, T-minus 1 week away as we do this podcast from
6 days.
Six days, wow. Yeah,
a week from yesterday.
Yeah, next Thursday,
speaking
right?
of that, next Thursday, we'll have Mark Topkin on to preview the season.
Hey, man, there's not a better show that we do. Have Mark Topkin on opening day. Are you kidding me? It didn't get any better than that, man. Show prep Tampa Bay right there.
Absolutely.
That's the best kind.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, let's keep rolling with these questions, right, man.
Tommy had asked, hey, guys, who have been your most improved and most disappointing players of the Lightning this season? I would think the most disappointing so far would have to be, from the new guys, Connor Sheary. You signed him to a
three... through a slump there for a long time.
Yeah, you signed him to a three-year deal.
Right.
He just hasn't... He's not hitting the score sheet at all. I don't think he's playing bad hockey. But for a guy you signed to 3 years, like a lot of those, they changed out a lot of their bottom six forwards. Pat Maroon's gone. Corey Perry's gone. Pierre Wood Belmar's gone. Like they changed out a lot. They brought in guys like Luke Lindenning and Tyler Mott and Connor Sheary. And a lot of those guys you signed to 1 year deals near the minimum. Connor Sheary, you signed for a 3 year deal. So you're expecting more out of him. And he got hurt early in the year. Not right away, but he got hurt early in the year. So he's got 3 goals so far and 10 assists in 50 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd like to see a lot more out. Now, he's playing fourth line minutes, so he's not like he's playing in the top six,
right,
like he has in parts of his career. But I think, you know, ultimately you'd like to see more out of him. I also think another one that's been a little disappointing is Nick Perbix. You know, last year was his first
season. At the end of the season, he was playing great, wasn't he, last year?
He did great. And it's not that he's played bad this year. He just hasn't taken that next step that you'd hope to see.
Yeah.
And you're seeing him be a healthy scratch some. Now that they've got Matt Dumba in, you know, they're moving some guys around. But, you know, he's one where you would have liked to have seen him just take another step this year. I mean, he hasn't played bad. It's not, but, you know, Darren Radish, you're starting to see really elevate his game. He struggled a little bit early in the year, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Nick Perbix is one where you're hoping, you know, come next year or as the rest of the season goes on, you hope he starts to take that next step. And for defensemen, it can take a while. Like it's not uncommon to be good and then go back. You know, Emil Lilleberg came up and did really well and then kind of plateaued a little bit and they sent him back down. Now he's back up. But, you know, a young defenseman, it takes time. So I not writing him off or anything, but just you were hoping to see him take another step this year, and you really haven't seen that.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to be paired up with the right guy, mm-hmm. too. You know, like there's some synergy that has to happen back there. I'm going to skip to, and it's easy to, what was it, the most improved? Is that what the question was?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if he's improved, but this is the guy that I follow. You tell me if I'm right about this, Steve, is Brandon Hagel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does so many things, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got 23 goals. He could finish with arguably 30, you know, or close to it.
Yep.
40 assists, though. And I think you kind of look at the plus. I think he's like a minus one for this season, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But Hagel just reminds me, like, he's got so much. He's got a lot of speed. He's a clutch. He's that, you know, guy that will give you that secondary scoring. And it just seems like his game has a lot more meat left on it. You know what I mean? Like he could be a consistent 30 goal scorer.
Well, and it helps he's getting top line minutes. I mean, he often plays
no
with
question.
Kucherov. Right now he's on the line with Cirelli and Stamkos, and him and Cirelli have great chemistry together.
Mm-hmm.
Like especially on the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, he's also playing on that shutdown. I mean, Cirelli's the shutdown line, which is where he's playing now and still getting points. So
right.
He's been fantastic this year. I think guys like Mikey Acemont has surprised.
Acemont's been nice, yeah. Instigator, just a lot like Yanni Gourde, yep, really.
But 10 goals up from him. And Luke Lindenning has been fantastic.
We've
got 9 goals out of Lindenning. He had, I think, 5 all last year.
Wow.
With Dallas. He's been great. And Tanner Jeannot is one that people say is disappointing. He's been hurt so much.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard. I mean, you know, he hasn't done as much as you'd hope, but he's missed 25 games this season.
When he's on the ice, you notice him, though.
Yeah.
He's
back now. And Tuesday night, he had, what, 7 hits in 10 minutes of ice time?
Oh, yeah, man.
We're recording this before the Lightning take on the Sharks Thursday night.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He is going to be on the ice tonight, too, so we'll see how he does. But
yeah, no, those are good ones. Look, they're on a roll. I don't know how they do against the Sharks because, like you said, we're doing this before the game. But, man, when you get on the roll at the right time, as they are right now, and then beat some quality teams, you know, with New York and Florida and
the other surprising ones have been some of the kids that come up. Emil Lilleberg and Max Crozier and, like, all these guys from Syracuse that have come up, and some of them only get a couple games, but they've all shown well.
They've all showed up.
And you know, the Lightning's one of the issues you have when you win as much as they have, and you've traded a lot of your assets, picks and or prospects, that your prospect pool is a lot shallower than many other teams. But to see that all these kids that they've called up, even for just a handful of games, have shown well and look like they belong. Like, they don't look out of place. They don't look lost. They've shown themselves very well. And that's been a needed boost this season. I think it brought some energy at the time, too, much like Duclair and Dumba have brought energy since the trade deadline.
Absolutely.
And then the other one, don't forget, is Jonas Johansson and how well he did the first 20 games of
Fantastic.
The season.
Yeah, and you almost forget about him because, you know, you didn't even have your number one goaltender, and he kept them in it.
Yep.
You know, played a lot of games and played pretty well. So that was a nice pickup.
And I think Victor Hedman's had a great bounce back year too. I think, you know, he struggled a little bit last year and didn't look like himself much of the year. Remember Sergachev was taking over some of the power play time from him, and that Victor Hedman's been fantastic this year. And, you know, he's got 12 goals. He's up to 67 points. And since Sergachev's gone down, the amount of ice time he's logged and, you know, the team.
I just think he's healthier this year, don't you, Steve?
I fully believe a lot of that was injury last year. I don't think he was 100%.
Yeah.
But to see him bounce back has been really good. So,
yeah. No, it's a great time right now. If the Lightning can keep it going and get hot at the right time going in the postseason, like I said, still mathematically could take Toronto, I think.
Yeah, they're 7 points back with, 14 to play. So
yeah,
they could be 5 points back after you hear this. Like I said, we're taping it before the Sharks game. So
they'll need some help, but it could be a race.
Yep. John asks, is it still early on the Duclair and Dumba trades, but so far the Lightning seem to be improved. Compared to last season, are they in better shape for the playoffs this year? I don't know if they're in better shape, but here's I mean, last year they were pretty much locked into the 3 seed early on.
Yeah.
Like, you knew it was going to be them in the 3 seed. This year, they're right now in the first wild card, but they're not guaranteed to make the playoffs yet. They're in a pretty good spot right now. And if they just handle their business, they're going to be fine.
Right.
But, you know, they're not as locked in as knowing they're in the playoffs at this point. And maybe that's part of why they're playing the way they are, too, is this is playoff time, essentially.
Yeah, it's essentially their playoffs. And in a weird way, it either exhausts you or it prepares you, right? Like, you either the fight to get there is so exhausting that when you do get there, you don't have anything left. Or you've been in playoff mode for so long. And this was a case in football last year with the Bucks. You know, they got to a point where they really couldn't afford to lose any more games. And they wound up winning, you know, 5 of their last 6. And including they had to win the last one against Carolina, which, you know, Baker was broken up with the ribs, but they eked that one out. But then they carried that, I felt like, into the playoffs. You know, they got a Philadelphia team that was headed the wrong direction, but the Bucks had been winning for so long that every game was like a playoff. And I think that's why they handled the postseason as well as they did.
No question. I also think, you know, tell me in 14 games from now how healthy they are.
True.
You know, Lightning, I mean, right now, Sergachev is out for a while, and maybe he could come back if they go deep in the playoffs. Who knows?
Janot's coming back.
Janot is back. So really the only player that's out right now is Hayden Fleury.
Right.
And he's not in the game tonight against the Sharks, but he was skating during the optional morning skate on Thursday. So presumably he's, you know, close to being back, which at that point you basically have a full roster with the exception of Sergachev,
right?
Which you're not going to get back for a while. And if Sergachev didn't get hurt, you don't have Dumba and Duclair either. So not that you want that, but so
no,
you know, the health of your team additions come playoff time matters a lot too.
Yeah. Well, look, the keys here, right? Kucherov, Stamkos, you know, Hedman. I mean, you know, if you got your core healthy, That's the biggest thing. And of course, you know, goaltending is everything, but I like the way they're playing. I mean, I don't know if they can sustain this throughout the remaining of, you know, end of the season, but they've picked off some pretty tough teams. And I know those teams and their fan bases don't want to see the Lightning in the postseason. So,
well, if they keep taking care of business now, they don't have to.
True.
They can, if they can clinch a playoff spot before you get to the last week of the season,
you take some time off.
That can help. You could rest a guy for a game. You could, you know, you could do any. And players don't like to do that, but you would have that option.
But it's nice to be able to choose to do that, mm-hmm. yeah.
Instead so if they of keep playing the way they're doing, that will help. I mean, you know, I'm looking at the standings here, and the Lightning at this point, with 14 games to go, their magic number is 23. And that's assuming that Detroit, Washington, and Philly all win all their games, which won't happen.
So you just have to win 12 more games, and you're there.
Well, yeah, 12 out of 40. But, I mean, every loss by some of those teams lowers
that
number.
No, I know.
Obviously. I mean, so the Lightning at most can get to 108 points.
Okay.
Washington and Philly can both get to 103. One of them would be the third seed in the Metro. The other could then be a wild card. And Detroit can get to 102. So, I mean, the Lightning are starting to, I wouldn't say distance themselves, but
they're separating a little
bit. They're separating. And if you can, like I said, you'll know the outcome of the Sharks game by the time you hear this, but if they can take two out of the three in the California part of the trip, San Jose, LA, Anaheim this weekend, take 4 out of 6 points there, you're doing fine. If you can take all three, even better. But you know, it's John Cooper will say munching points, but they're in a pretty good spot right now. We just had to just keep winning.
Yeah, just keep winning, baby.
You don't have to win them all. Just win 3 out of 5.
Right.
You keep a 600 winning percentage. You win 3 out of every 5 games, you'll be in the playoffs, no problem.
Mm-hmm. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I just think it's a question of whether they're a wild card or not, and it looks like they will be. But whether they get the Rangers or Florida in the first round, we'll see.
We can end on this one here. Christopher had tweeted us. Mm-hmm. Says, will the Orlando Magic win more than one game in the playoffs? I feel like basketball is not covered enough in this podcast, and we should change that. I don't care about what goes on with the Heat, though.
So it's not the Heat, it's the Magic.
He likes the Magic, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Well, I like to joke, and I told you this beforehand. I've lived in a lot of cities and moved around a lot.
Yeah.
I like to joke I've never lived in a town with an NBA team. But I lived in Atlanta, but the year I was there, the Hawks were awful. I think they were the worst team in the NBA. I then moved to Memphis, and at that point, Memphis had made the playoffs a couple years, but then they dismantled it and kind of tore it down to rebuild, and they were awful the time I was there. And then I moved to Minnesota in Minneapolis, where the Timberwolves were the worst team in the NBA while I was there. So I like to joke, I've never lived in a town with an NBA team, but that's not
true. You're discounting the Toronto Raptors during COVID.
Well, the Raptors were here too, yeah.
Were okay.
Yeah, the joke in Memphis was the NBA team was the Memphis Tigers. Because Calipari was taking them to the national title game, and Derrick Rose is there, and Chris Douglas Roberts, and Joey Dorsey, and it was a phenomenal teams there. They were a lot better than the Grizzlies.
Well, your Orlando Magic, just checking on them, took down the Pelicans just the other night. So
I think they're tied for fourth with the Knicks right now. So if the playoffs started today, they'd face the Knicks.
Right.
I think they played less games, so they're tied games back, but winning percentage, the Knicks are ahead. So Knicks would be the home court at this point. But the Orlando's having a great season. I mean, I don't watch the NBA a lot. Just never have really, but I'm glad to see Orlando's finally doing well. I mean, they've been rebuilding for years. They've got a good young core there.
Yeah, from what I've read, they built it the right way. I don't know how many draft picks, and I don't follow the Magic. I don't follow the NBA. We'll have to start doing so just to, if we can help one listener, clearly, why not, right? I know they've been in contention all year long. The thing about the NBA, though, is that it seems like if you don't have, at least one, maybe two superstars, it's tough to advance deep into the postseason. You're going to get your Giannis's and your, the Lakers obviously have struggled even with LeBron, but, it seems to be a league of stars and Orlando has them, but they're just young. I would love, there was a time, it seems like 100 years ago now, but we covered a lot of things back in the day, but the Magic were so good, with Anthony Hardaway, Penny Hardaway, and Shaq, that was the team, right? Like they, they were playing the Bulls and stuff, you know, and you know, Michael Jordan and locked horns in the NBA playoffs with those guys. That was, that was an amazing ride over to Orlando to go see those teams. You know,
no question about it.
And they've had better teams since then, but I'm just saying, or good teams since then, obviously.
But it wasn't just a good team. They were star power. I mean, that was star
power. They had stars, yeah. Shaq obviously was, you know, the show. But even Penny, and you remember him from, from Memphis,
coaching
right?
the Memphis Tigers now.
Yeah, that's right. So, and then all the commercials, you know, Little Penny and all this. I mean, they were a marquee team. The NBA was cool. But maybe they'll get back there. So we'll bone up a little bit on the NBA before we get to the playoffs and on the Magic. Seems to me like they can win a series. They've been that kind of team. So young teams with some energy, I could see them winning a series. They'll be paired against New York, the Knicks, we think?
As of right now, yes, if the playoffs started today.
Well, that'd be a letdown for New York, but because the Knicks haven't been relevant for a while, but they're very good too. So
you get Stephen A. talking about the series. I mean,
yeah, man, yeah, he's a huge Knicks fan, and he might come down to O-Town. So we look forward to utterly ridiculous Orlando Magic basketball. But yeah, we don't get much NBA action around here. But I, you know, it was interesting though. You did a lot of Toronto Raptors games when they were down here for COVID, right?
I ran all the fake crowd noise.
Well, now
for the game,
yes, it was.
Because there was nobody in the arena. I mean, it was empty.
Nobody in the arena, but it sounded on TV as if there was. And so you – now, did you have a – like, were there a series? Like, was it just one potted crowd noise or –
Oh, no. It was layers over layers. Or it was actually really cool the way they did it.
So you could almost do like a Let's Go Raptors thing, right? Like a
They kind didn't of really a, have that as much, but you had kind of the, you know, cheers after a made basket and
– Hard foul.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of ooze.
Was there some ooze?
Oh yeah, there
and
was
ahs?
Some ooze and ahs and stuff like that. Yeah, and it was the way they structured it and the way they built it, and there was two of us running the sound, so you would work in tandem. Like one would
actually kind of had to be kind of fun, right?
It was actually really cool. But one person would run the underlying sound in the arena and get louder as the play goes and doesn't. And then the other was kind of the ooze, the ahs, the,
so you had the ambient the three, sound and then you had the,
It was, it was a really cool system. I mean, it was something 6 months prior, no one even knew you ever needed to do. And some company came up with how to do it and it worked really well.
I tell you, man, the things that we learned through COVID, right? If I'd have just bought some stock in Lululemon, I would not be doing this podcast. I'd be a billionaire by now. That's what my wife tells me all the time. I didn't know that our fashion for the next 10 years was going to be lounge clothes.
Didn't she buy enough during COVID that you own part of it? Or?
Practically. I mean, there's actually a resale market for these things, so maybe I will again. But it is incredible. Like, it's funny because my kids go to school. And I guess it's always kind of been this way, but it really is this way now, is that, you know, they're the COVID kids. I mean, they actually missed some of them a year and a half of school, it seemed. And when they went back, because they had been in nothing but sweatpants, they were nothing but sweatpants. Even if it's, and it's always got me with young kids in middle school and high school, it can be 90 degrees, we're wearing sweatpants, right? But then it can be 40 degrees and they're wearing shorts. Whatever the weather is, they're going the other way.
My sons will not wear pants. It's always shorts.
Always shorts, right? It could be freezing.
They'll wear
some
long socks occasionally. You know, if
my son was the same way, I'm like, dude.
But they'll wear sweatshirts in 95 degree weather and play outside all day in sweatshirts.
All right, that's what I'm saying. What is with these guys? I'd say in my day, we wore t-shirts and we liked it. When it was hot, man, I couldn't wear that stuff. I sweat too much, but you know, nowadays I just think it's.
Yeah, and when we were growing, we were wearing cotton, too, and you're sweating.
Well, that's true.
You know, now they got the dry fits. It's great.
Well, yeah, it doesn't seem to matter if they sweat,
they're
I guess.
They're wearing sweatshirts.
Yeah, but they wear the big, heavy sweatshirts, though.
Oh, yeah,
over
top they do, yeah. But I'm saying the shirts are dry fit.
I know.
But, yeah, it's
absorbing the water under there, but it still can't be good. Anyway, that's our fashion tip for the week, by the way. Take that to the weekend for all your kids. But so I guess we'll wrap up the mailbag questions there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got, a pretty good weekend and ahead. Check out the Tampa Bay Times. Yeah. Levante David, I wanted to mention him real quickly. Yep. He is going to have his press conference around noon today. And I got to tell you, he's one of my favorite all-time Bucks to cover. And not just because he's a good player, which I think goes without saying, but a guy that does everything the right way. And when I mean everything, I mean, like, no one's perfect, right? But, like, has really become a pro's pro to the point where, you know, he doesn't take anything for granted. You know, we were talking about Devin White going to the Eagles and kind of, you know, how his career got sideways and some of the lack of effort and stuff. You will never see Devin White cheat the game. And he may not make plays. He may miss plays. He may miss fits. He may miss tackles. He may be in no man's land, you know, at times. But he plays, and it matters to him. And he's a great leader. He's a quiet leader. But he also is, you know, off the field. He's done an awful lot for the Boys and Girls Club. Like, he cares, you know, and he cares about how he's perceived to the point where, like, I think we said this, he has people he trusts to tell him whether or not he's playing well. And he doesn't take it for granted. I've asked him this question a million times. They're always the same answer. He goes, Rick, every time I come to training camp, I look at myself as a rookie and I have to earn my spot. I don't take anything for granted that I'm going to be playing, you know, and he plays that way. And if everybody did that, obviously you'd have a much better football team, but not many people get to their free agent contract, make to the second contract. I think this is, and I know he's gone year to year now because of his age, but it's like his fourth or fifth contract. It's crazy, you know, and to be able, and that's a guy who, you know, the next year, whenever he's done playing, you can put him on the Ring of Honor right away. I think, and we'll get into this one day, it's going to be a hard sell because I know that room and I know what they look at, but I think his longevity, much like Ronnie Barber's, I think his longevity could get him into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And what you've seen is guys like, you know, Zach Thomas, right? Zach Thomas getting in will help Lavonte David. Luke Kuechly will be helped by Zach Thomas. And Luke Kuechly, you know, tremendous linebacker, drafted the same year as Lavonte, but didn't play very long, played about 7-8 years because he had concussions. But he's going to make the Hall of Fame. I believe that. And I think he'll make it because he was on a lot of Pro Bowls and probably an all-decade team. But he, you know, very cerebral guy, could call out the play before you run it. But because he didn't play long, having guys like Zach Thomas in there will help him. And if Kuechly gets in, I'm here to tell you, you can make great arguments for Lavonte David, whose numbers are not that far off from Derrick Brooks. You know, I think Brooks has more tackles, and he played, they played just about the same number of years almost. But Lavonte, because he won a Super Bowl and he got recognized for what he did that year, and people, have, you know, and the Bucks have been relevant. They made the playoffs 4 years in a row. He's gotten a little bit of late run in his career from a national recognition standpoint. So I hope he has another good year or two if he chooses to play. And I think it won't be first ballot. It won't be, you know, second year or the third year or the fifth. I think it took Rondy like 6 or 7 years. But I hope down the road that he has a good shot at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And if he does, man, I mean, you just think about this team. You know, the story is not written for Wirfs and Winfield yet. Those two guys, if they play long enough, are going to put on gold jackets. We know Mike Evans will. So you could look back and say, wow, they had a number of Pro Football Hall of Famers on that team that won the Super Bowl and then, you know, was good for some time after that. So it'd be something to watch. But it'd be fun to talk to Lavonte today. So look for that in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com.
Don't forget, USF plays VCU in the second round of the NIT Sunday night at 7:30 at the Yuengling Center.
They got the home game, baby. It's going to be rocking. Yeah. It's going to be great.
So, and Lightning have back-to-back games over the weekend. Anaheim or Los Angeles, 10:30 Saturday night. Anaheim, 8:30 Sunday night.
Yeah. Well, as we do this, we're going to switch to the Lightning and watch them play. Should be a great weekend in sports. Of course, we got March Madness or Match Madness or whatever you want to call it.
Yep. And the last weekend of spring training is opening day.
The last weekend. So now this is the week where you keep everybody healthy and just don't play anyone. But baseball's here. Who do they open with? I haven't seen the opponent.
Toronto.
It's the Toronto Blue Jays? Okay. Well, that's unfortunate, but Toronto can mash. Those guys can swing the bats. They always do here, too. But it'll be great. It'll be great to see the opening day. I love opening day. It should be a national holiday. Kids should stay home from school, all of that. I'm all about it. But it's a great time of year. We got the Valspar going on in Tampa as well. Get out and see some of that.
Absolutely.
I think we're going to have a little rain maybe today in Friday's forecast. But other than that, should be nice out there. And that's always a great event. So
yeah, the busy weekend. It's Toronto and Texas for the opening homestand. So.
Oh, is that who they – wow. So the world champions are coming, huh?
That's correct.
Okay. Well.
And then they go out west, Colorado and the Angels.
So you think they win 13 in a row this year?
I wouldn't bet on that, but.
So I've been done a couple times. Wouldn't that be wild if they got off to another one of those starts and just be like.
It'd be great.
Yeah, this is what they do. Here they come. They're going to win about 13 in a row. It's just baseball is the best. And you have it almost every night. And I think there's. I think I saw where Bally's televising about 156 games or something like that. So we'll get to watch a lot of them if you have Bally. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening. Check out Tampa Bay Times, tampabay.com for all your latest Bucks news and everything else. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.